Radio Prague News.
Anti-nuclear activists blockade a Czech-Austrian border crossing in protest at the Temelin nuclear power plant. A new UNICEF report on children's health indicates that Czech children are materially well off but suffer from emotional neglect. And doctors in the Czech Republic hold a one-day strike in protest at reduced patient fees from insurance companies. Around 20 Austrian opponents of the Czech Temelin nuclear power plant blockaded the Czech-Austrian border crossing at Vulovice and Dolní Dvorozice on Wednesday morning. The anti-nuclear activists from the Atomstop organisation want to pressure their government into prosecuting the Czech Republic for failing to observe a Czech-Austrian treaty on nuclear safety. The controversial Temelin nuclear power plant has been a sore point in Czech-Austrian relations since it began operating 6 years ago. Many in Austria claim that the facility's Soviet design makes it more likely to experience a Chernobyl-style meltdown. Authorities say Wednesday's hour-long protest did not cause any major traffic problems, as many drivers simply used crossings at Halamka and České Velenice nearby. A UNICEF report on the health and well-being of the world's children indicates that Czech children are materially well off but suffer from emotional neglect. The Czech Republic ranked 11th in terms of material needs, 10th in terms of healthcare provided, and 9th in terms of education. However, broken homes, single parenthood, and poor communication between children and parents put the Czech Republic 19th as far as emotional needs go, and 17th according to the children's own subjective assessment. Overall, the Czech Republic ranked 15th ahead of countries such as Great Britain, France and the United States. Dozens, possibly hundreds, of Czech GPs and pediatricians staged a one-day strike today in protest at new regulations which have reduced the amount of money insurance companies give them per patient. Jan Jelinek, deputy chairman of the Czech Association of Czech General Practitioners, told a Czech news agency that the financial restrictions are having an adverse effect on the quality of healthcare provided. Support for the strike is strongest in Moravia, but in some regions where there's currently a flu epidemic, doctors say they've reduced the strike to a symbolic 15-minute protest. Time for the weather now, and the next few days should be partly cloudy with some rain. Daytime temperatures should range between 5 and 9 degrees Celsius. I'm Colin O'Connor, and that's the end of the news. You find all these stories and more at www.radio.cz.
This is Radio Prague. I'm Pavla Horáková. Today, the Czech Republic ranks 16th in a new UNICEF report on child welfare. We ask about the details. Today is St. Valentine's Day. How is it catching on in the Czech Republic? And 40 years ago, schools in this country stopped forcing left-handers to write with their right hand. Later on, we look at the life and times of Otakar Machotka, a Charles University professor and politician who was forced to flee Czechoslovakia after the 1948 communist takeover. Please stay tuned. The welfare of children in the world's most advanced states is the focus of an extensive report just released by the United Nations Children's Organization, UNICEF. It uses a wide range of factors, from health to poverty to relations with family and peers, to rate 21 countries. The Netherlands is judged to have the best child well-being, the UK the worst. The Czech Republic ranks 16th, though the news is not all bad. Ian Willoughby spoke to the head of the Czech branch of UNICEF, Pavla Gomba, and asked her in which areas the country did well.
Well, we traditionally rate well, especially in healthcare and also education. By the way, the only indicator where we were the first out of all these 21 countries which were surveyed was in the number of books that children have available at home. So I would say health and education, and of course also relative poverty, we were in the upper average.
And are there any other positive aspects for the Czech Republic in this report?
Well, I think that the development is positive because we do surveys like that, although maybe not in this size regularly. And for example, the economic indicators are of course improving, and this has an impact on the situation of children.
And can I please ask you, in what categories is the Czech Republic judged to be weaker in terms of child well-being?
Well, this survey identified some gaps, and the gaps are especially in the area of, let's say, emotional well-being or relationships, especially in the families, and also relationships to the peers of the children. Also, one of the questions were how many times a week a child has a breakfast. In this indicator, we were, I think, on the third worst place.
Is there also an issue with a relatively low level of friendship among children themselves in the Czech Republic?
This was one of the surprises for us. I think that this is a very strong indication, and it should be taken seriously, especially at schools, because this is where children most get into contact with other children and their peers.
Finally, what do you say to the fact that the Czech Republic came 16th in this survey out of 21 states in terms of child welfare?
The aim of this survey is to provoke a debate and to identify the gaps for teachers, for parents, but also for the authorities, which can set up a more protective and more friendly environment for children as well. What is very surprising is how the children themselves rate their situation, and they were in fact more negative than the actual situation is, and this is, I think, a bit an area of concern.
My colleague Ian Willoughby was talking to UNICEF's Pavla Gomba, and we apologize for the bad mobile phone line. February 14th is St. Valentine's Day, a holiday marked by lovers throughout many parts of the world. On the day, many send cards, as many as 1 billion by some estimates, while others opt for flowers or chocolates. But here in the Czech Republic, Valentine's Day is a much more recent phenomenon, and you may be surprised to learn that even now, most Czechs mark another day as the Day of Love. Jan Wellinger has details.
Before 1989, Valentine's Day was practically unknown in then Czechoslovakia, and most Czechs traditionally marked May 1st, not only as International Labor Day, but as a day for lovers. Even now, on the 1st of May, young couples are recommended to kiss under a blossoming cherry tree to ensure a year of good health and good luck. On the day, it's also long been a tradition for Praguers to meet at the statue of romantic poet Karel Hynek Mácha on the capital's Petrín Hill. Of course, since 1989, Valentine's Day has made inroads, thanks in no small part to the florist, jewelry, perfume, and greeting card industries. And it's now become a question whether Czechs prefer one day over the other. Earlier, I spoke with a number of people out on the streets of Prague.
I think Valentine is nothing for us. We don't feel it. I think that we don't feel it. It's just a matter of commerce, but that's it. Our tradition is 1st May. It's a special day. Spring symbolizes new life and love for Czechs.
I've never been celebrating Valentine's before 89 or 90. Even now I'm not celebrating it. First May Day is maybe more popular here than a Valentine. I think that more people are using it to go out and to meet at Petrín Hill and maybe kiss down a tree or visit the statue of Karel Hynek Mácha, the Czech poet.
In Czech Republic, I have no idea. It's very commercial used to celebrate it or not. I don't know.
For us, it's a new holiday, one that I don't really celebrate. But when you see how others mark the day, especially young people, their enthusiasm kind of rubs off.
No, I don't like the holiday. It strikes me as imported, and I don't celebrate it or respect it as a holiday at all.
Despite the abundance of answers to the negative there, there are some who say that there is room for both holidays in the Czech calendar. Magdalena Palenková, a florist I spoke to who runs a shop near Wenceslas Square, told me she likes Valentine's. And she says, contrary to some of the criticism, the holiday has caught on. Her proof? Flower sales on February 14th go up.
I think that Valentine's Day has begun to catch on. Flower sales usually go up on the day, sometimes even a couple of days before. Clients include both Czechs and foreigners. It's around 50-50. It's true that Valentine's doesn't have a long history here, but I do like it. The only thing is that I'm not seeing anybody just now, so I myself am not expecting any flowers this year.
Florist Magdalena Palenková ending that report by Jan Wellinger. Now, enjoying a glass of chilled beer, one would hardly think of the complex biochemical process that is beer production. The prime ingredients are malt, hops, water, and also yeast, which helps turn sugar into alcohol and also influences the flavor of the beer. There are many kinds of brewer's yeast suitable for different types of fermentation, but few breweries can boast having used the same kind of yeast for over a century. The Czech brewer Budějovický Budvar has cultivated the same stream since 1895, and as master brewer Josef Tolar told me, it is so sturdy it easily put up with modern technologies introduced a few years ago.
It is very unusual because just in the last several years a lot of breweries have changed the production from traditional small fermenters to cylindrical tanks, which are type of modern big fermenters, staying tanks, vertical oriented tanks. And it is the fact which is bringing just quite another conditions for yeast, let's say pressure, let's say volume of the vessel, and the way of sedimenting when we are speaking about sedimentation of yeast, and all such things are influencing the function of yeast. And a lot of breweries, by changing the technology, were in need to change the type of yeast. Not in our brewery. We have had a good luck that our yeast have managed the changing conditions, and we have obtained the same product when we came from small quadratic open fermenters to cylindroconical tanks in 1993-1995 without any problems.
And do you know where this yeast came from?
It is not easy to say, because we know from the technological notices in the brewery that the first technical equipment for cultivation of yeast, so-called propagation, has been installed in the 30s in the last century, in 20th century. That means it was from now, let us say, 80 years back. What was before, which kind of vessels, which conditions for cultivation have been used, it is not given in the old notices. But what is very important, the type of yeast has not been changed, at least from 1930, when we have used this new style of cultivation. And we can suppose that the same stream, the same kind of yeast, has been used here in the brewery from the very beginning in 1895.
I was talking there to master brewer Josef Tolar about the unique yeast used by Budvar. Around 10% of people are left-handed, but it wasn't so long ago that those born left-handed were forced to write with their right hands. Life improved substantially for left-handed Czechs 40 years ago, when the authorities abandoned this practice. Lenka Petáková reports and meets a man who remembers the bad old days when left-handers were made to overcome their natural disposition.
In February 1967, the Czechoslovak Education Ministry decided to heed the advice of experts in the field and no longer force left-handed pupils to write with their right hand. The reform has been credited to the enlightened approach of the then education minister, František Kahuda. But what was life like for those who attended Czechoslovak schools before the old-fashioned approach was abandoned? Professor Otto Rybka is a former head of the Clinic of Internal Medicine at one of Prague's main hospitals. Now almost 90, he remembers some of the difficulties he experienced as a left-handed junior doctor.
Problem bylo, když jsem se stal demonstrátorem na patologické anatomii.
It was a problem when, as a young graduate, I became an instructor in the Department of Pathology. I naturally tended to hold the knife in my left hand and dissect the body with this hand. But my professor wanted me to do everything with my right hand when demonstrating how to dissect in front of the students, so that they would learn everything the right way. I learned how to dissect with my right hand, but it really was forced and artificial.
Professor Rybka was a very successful scientist, but his left-handedness did send his career down a different path than it might otherwise have taken.
Soon after I began to study medicine, I thought I would become an eye specialist. When I later worked in the Department of Pathology, Associate Professor Beneshova warned me that even if I could do everything with my left hand, that hand would never be as sensible and as fast as my right. At the same time, she said, I could not use my left hand because everything was designed to be used by the right hand. And also the cooperation between doctors during an operation was such that it didn't take left-handers into account.
Professor Rybka's pre-war teachers didn't completely succeed in changing his natural disposition. He told me he still holds a fork or spoon with his left hand when he's tired and on his own. What's more, whenever he needs to do something which requires real precision and feeling, like sounding a patient's lungs or abdomen, he uses exclusively his left hand. By the way, life still isn't too easy for left-handed people in the Czech Republic. They complain instruments adjusted for left-handers are hard to come by.
You are listening to Radio Prague. Time now to meet another Czech in history. Today, Ilja Meritz introduces Otakar Machotka.
There's an old framed photograph in my parents' house, which I have known since childhood. In the foreground, you can see the back of the head of Edvard Beneš, the second president of Czechoslovakia. And bowing forward to shake the president's hand is a distinguished-looking man with shiny, matinee-idol hair and a neatly folded kerchief in his pocket. That's Otakar Machotka, my grandfather. Our family story, as my grandmother used to tell it, always seemed to me a bit like the sound of music played in reverse. The Machotkas found their freedom by escaping into Germany. Otakar was our Captain von Trapp, the patriot whose political views force him to flee. One winter morning in Prague in 1948, Otakar put on his coat and hat and left the house and Czechoslovakia forever. That night he trudged over the mountains from the communist east into the American occupation zone of Germany. Weeks later, the rest of the family escaped too, my grandmother and the three Machotka children, including my mother Hanna, the youngest, who was not yet four. In Germany, the family was reunited and made their way to America, becoming, well, nobody special, just a family of five with strange accents and a funny last name. Still, I always sensed that my grandfather, who died before I was born, had been an important person in the old country. But what exactly had he done? Why was Otakar shaking President Beneš's hand in one moment and fleeing the country in the next?
Machotka was one of the ideologues of the National Socialist Party. He wrote this election program, for example. It was quite clear for me when the coup came that Machotka will be one among the first who will be prosecuted.
Lubomír Kotáčka was one of Otakar's sociology students at Charles University in the 1940s. He was also a junior member of the Czechoslovak National Socialists, a center-left party not to be confused with the German National Socialist or Nazi Party. Now 88 years old and a professor emeritus, Mr. Kotáčka showed me his course registry with a stamp, cancelled, next to my grandfather's name.
Machotka was one about typical targets of communist attacks. For example, he wrote some article about working class, about this scarcity of education among working class. And this constatation of fact was used by the communists as objecting to him that he wants that the workers shouldn't get a better or high education.
It wasn't always that way. 3 years earlier, Ottakar had worked with the communists and with others to help end the Nazi occupation of the country.
Prague is in great danger. The Germans are attacking with tanks and planes. We are calling urgently our allies to help.
Spring, 1945. Ottakar began meeting in secret with members of various Czech political parties, including the communists, to plan for the defense of Prague as the Nazi Reich collapsed. They called themselves the Czech National Council. On May 5th, as a battle raged between Czechs and the Nazi SS outside the studios of Czech radio, an announcer read the names of the members of the Czech National Council and said they were working to establish order.
Docent Dr. Otakar Machocka, bývalý národní socialista, inženýr Jaromír Kafka, za revoluční...
Across town, Ottakar and his colleagues had just emerged from exhausting negotiations with the Nazis' appointed boss in the Czech lands, Richard Binert.
I sat opposite Binert and was surprised to see he was grey in the face, and his large figure seemed to shake. We tried to calm him by offering him hundreds of cigarettes, since we knew he was a serious smoker. But after an hour, he still wasn't ready to cede control to the National Council.
Those are Ottakar's words, and my translation. Since coming to the Czech Republic last year, my Czech has gotten just good enough to read my grandfather's account of his role in the Prague uprising. After another hour, the council got Binert to sign a statement they had written, but in the days that followed, fierce battles still raged.
We got to the top of Sasavska Street in Vinohrady, where the gunfire was much worse. The military captain of our vehicle gave the order for us to get out and each try separately to get to the Vinohrady brewhouse. There was shooting everywhere. On the other side of the street by the water tower, a frantic German hid behind the store's roller shutter and fired directly on our group through a small crack. Bullets exploded against the walls all around us. Somehow, none of us was hit. I still remember with admiration how Professor Albert Prajak, despite his advanced age and large figure, bravely endured this dangerous situation.
Though the Nazis were doomed, the Czechs lacked the arms to force a surrender. On May 8th, the National Council negotiated with General Toussaint, the German commander, offering his army safe passage through Prague in return for their not destroying the city. Ottakar writes that Toussaint was a handsome soldier and surprisingly sentimental. The next day, with the Germans mostly gone, the Soviet army arrived and claimed they had freed the city. More than 1,600 Praguers had died in the uprising. At a reception at Prague Castle the following month, President Beneš gave an award to each member of the council. Recently I learned that that is what's happening in that old black-and-white photo. Thanks to his role in the uprising, Ottakar became a leader in President Beneš's party. But the show of unity did not last long. For 3 years, Czechoslovakia teetered between democracy and dictatorship. Then, in February 1948, the Iron Curtain fell over the country, when the communists staged a coup. Josef Lesák was just 25 years old and the country's youngest member of parliament.
No, naposledy jsme se setkali toho 23. února.
The last time I saw your grandfather was on the 23rd of February 1948 at a meeting of our party. We ran into each other in the hallway. I said hello, we shook hands. Later, I thought Machocka and I could meet again someday if I could get out of this country. But instead, I ended up in court and then at a labor camp. I worked for 29 years in the coal mines. And Ottakar Machocka certainly didn't belong there. He was already long gone.
Lesák pointed with pride to a bookshelf in his small living room. My name is mentioned in every one of these books, he said, gesturing across 24 or so volumes on Czechoslovak history. I asked if he was bitter that Ottakar got out, and he didn't. Not a bit, he said.
Jemu nezbývalo nic jiného. Ten totiž si musel být vědom.
Your grandfather had no choice but to flee. He'd have been among the first to be arrested. He wrote the most sharply anti-communist texts, and the party would have taken revenge on him and his family. So I'm glad he got out. Years ago, I was happy when I heard the news on a foreign radio broadcast.
Že je venku.
Josef Lesák has ended that edition of Czechs in History. And that's all we have time for today. Just a reminder that all the stories you heard today can be found on our website www.radio.cz, both in sound and text. The address for your questions and comments is english@radio.cz or Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. Now from me, Pavla Horáková, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening and tune in again soon.